This is Shift Shift Forward, a new podcast from Glitch that showcases everything that makes Glitch the best place to create on the web. I'm Alexa, the VP of Marketing here at Glitch, and in this episode, we're tackling a big question. Are we all in tech? Author and entrepreneur Mushambi Mutuma sits down with our producer TK as they discuss being tech adjacent in our modern world. Later, we're debuting a new segment from Jen Schiffer, our Director of Health and Support, called Jengineering. Trust me, you won't want to miss that. But first, Maurice from our marketing team sat down with our VP of Engineering, James Turnbull, and one of our software engineers, Sheridan Cates, to get their thoughts on tech jobs and industry.
Why don't you start off by telling us how you both got into technology?
So my dad worked for IBM. So I had access to computers from a young age. I would say my first school assignment that I did on a computer was actually in the late 80s. And I played with Logo, like the little turtle that would move around. But then I think a lot changed when the internet like became a thing. And I remember the first MP3 I downloaded, which took about 4 hours on Napster, which I'm probably not supposed to say. And that really excited me, like the kind of potential for communication. And like, you know, it wasn't just a computer. There were like people at the other end of those computers. And so I did engineering, but it was general engineering. So it was like everything from electrical, like mechanical, bunch of different things. And I did a computer science module there, but like it was done in a very like isolated way. And it wasn't getting that people element. And so initially I went out into consulting and technology consulting, but then I discovered about product management. And so like, you know, really I came into technology through what people might think was a technology adjacent role. And as a product manager, I felt like I could use the technical skills that I'd gained, but not in a way where I had to be like, you know, what I thought was a very solitary, like, you know, sitting by yourself behind a computer profession. And then I started out at Google and was there for about 7 years. And then when I actually was working in the profession, I could see that, you know, that's not what a technology job was. Like, you know, the whole point was that you were building things that people could use. And I started to get like really sad that I was no longer building that myself. And so that kind of like took me back, steered me back into the world where I wanted to be building things again. And so over the course of a few startups, I got back into software engineering and I'm here at Glitch as a software engineer now.
I was similarly, none of my family is into technology. Pretty much my entire family is, my dad was a journalist and my sister's an artist and like there's not a lot of technology in the family. But I liked computers and I probably like computer games more than anything else. And then that sort of led to like, I worked out you could actually sort of break into computer games and change things and potentially violate copyright licenses. I think that the statute of limitations is probably gone on that and the companies are out of business, so I'm probably safe. But I was actually working in a library stacking books and the library was run by a mid-range computer system called an AS/400, and it broke one afternoon and the chap who was supposed to look after it wasn't there, and somebody said, James knows something about computers, maybe he can fix it. And I walked in there and there's a message on the screen and there's a big pile of books, and I looked in the books and found the message and then followed the instructions, and everyone was like, you're a genius. And then I discovered that people actually get paid money to do this thing. And at the time, I think I was making less than minimum wage, so discovered that my salary quadrupled or something like that overnight. And ever since then I've sort of been doing that. That's probably 20 years ago now.
What would you consider to be a tech job, like in the classic definition?
I think it's probably the people who build the technology pieces. Is probably the classical definition of a technology job.
Yeah. And then classical, and then like on top of that, like I think like anyone who's being creative with a technology, but like I keep going back to spreadsheets. And Neil's going to think I'm just pandering to him or something, but like I do think the spreadsheets are, you know, like what you can do with VBA. I mean, there's a database that's just in visual form, right? And you know, like if you're in like finance departments or, you know, creating like automation, yes, of course there are financial tools, and you know, if you just use those financial tools, then maybe that's not necessarily a tech job. But if you're generating the processes by which like things can be improved, and you know, maybe that's a tech job too.
I was just gonna say, these days I'd probably also put product people and designers and business analysts and data people, and who may not necessarily, they are building technology in their own right, it's just not classically considered, like, maybe not, it's not like writing lines of code or building a, you know, building a software system of some kind.
I mean, do people think that tech is a cost center or a value generator, and are the engineers treated accordingly?
That's a good way of thinking about it. I think the days when sort of technology was considered IT and was like a sunk cost, and like, you know, whereas now it's actually a business differentiator. Like, if your mortgage app is on the phone is more appealing to a particular demographic than your competitors, that might make a tangible difference in the number of leads or people who, you know, buy mortgages from you.
What does the future of the tech industry look like?
I have to say, I was not really into like tech for the sake of it. I didn't really relate to the types of people that you'd see like spending a ton of time on computers. I saw the stats about, like, you know, during the 80s, like about how like all of these films were like weird science, like these films were like very much like young white men portrayed as the people who were on computers. And then, like, you know, that starts to become like the stereotype of who does that, these tech jobs. Like, that's not the case anymore, I hope. I feel like we're all moving towards like a world where we understand that those messages were sent to us, and like, it's not just about technology for technology's sake. It's for like building stuff. It's like there's a range of people excited in this thing. And so hopefully people don't see those stereotypes anymore and feel like more included.
Yeah. The biggest blocker, I think, these days is the fact that we need more people who look in the industry who don't look like me, because we tend to hire like. So that's why I keep coming to startups in San Francisco that are full of Stanford graduates, right? Because that's the only people they know. Engineers look like Mark Zuckerberg and a hoodie and, you know, who dropped out of Harvard. And I think that the really interesting problems were solved by people that have a different perspective. People who understand that, like, if you're building a payments app, how do you deal with the fact that a lot of people don't have bank accounts? Like, people, how do you deal with undocumented people? There's a huge audience of folks out there who are just not serviced by technology, because the people who build the technology have no empathy for those people's problems or their experiences. I think the more we can do to diversify the industry makes it more powerful for that for those groups. And also, to be honest, it makes the market broader. This one thing that really frustrates me is like all of these tools that are designed for folks that live within a couple of square miles of Soma or Manhattan, when you could actually build tools with a broader audience in mind and make a lot more money, because you sell to a lot more people. And to me, that I'm not a huge fan of late stage capitalism, but if it's going to exist, you know, we should take advantage of its failings. Yeah, and that's always bewildered me, that people are people will ignore the experiences of others or the needs of others in favor of building something that knocks the rough edges off their affluence versus being a product that has a broader appeal.
Do either of you have any advice for people who want to sort of get into technology and learn how to really make it their own?
The way that has worked for me is like having something that I'm personally excited about existing out in the world. So one of the things that like got me back into this world was I really wanted a way to see bands on a map. So like, you know, if I had nothing to do that evening, like I wanted to be able to say, okay, like who's playing around me? And there was nothing, you know, I still don't think there's anything like that great that like lets you see like for a given date, like, you know, what's on around you, like on a map. And then also that you play their music like immediately, so I can be like, oh, this random band, like, I, you know, what do they sound like? And so I basically just hooked together a bunch of APIs and created this map for myself, Gigscape. It does exist out there, but not very useful right now because everyone's socially distancing. But so like, you know, being able to do that, like, I think, you know, the times when you're just like, oh God, I can't be bothered to like learn this part, like you're motivated to, because you really want that thing to exist in the world. And then, you know, if you want to actually work in a tech job, like I find that like there's a lot of like, you know, roles like in customer service or that kind of thing, like, you know, maybe you can like get into a company like in a non-technical role and then get excited about the product and then like move into like, you know, those types of roles through like maybe a different path. That's something else that I think is a possible way to get into technology.
Yeah, I teach a variety of sort of introduction to tech topics and work adjacent skills, and I always say to people, if you want to like, it's really hard to learn unless you're naturally inclined. I think it's very hard to pick up a book that says, you know, programming 101 and learn a programming language.
But if you have a specific problem or thing that annoys you about the world, then solving that problem using some form of technology. I was working with a bunch of people at a coding academy a couple of years ago, and a bunch of them came up with like tools to make working with 311, which is New York City's like you dial 311 if your gas is not working or like you have a city related problem, like make it easier to deal with 311 or identify people who lived in food deserts, identify like places that sold various grocery items otherwise might be hard to find in a neighborhood, or things that allowed people to sort of cut the rough edges off or the difficulties involved in doing things. And I think those are very motivating because you get an immediate sense of like, I achieved something, and also you are solving a real problem. You're not solving a hypothetical one. Like I always look at the classic example of like, if you look at a program example, it's always like, here's a to-do app or here's a blog app. And for the vast majority of people, it's like, what am I going to do with this? But if it's an example of like, here is a thing that I can actually practically do something with, means I'm likely to stick with it and means I'm likely to iterate on it too.
Yeah. And I think it's like, it doesn't even have to be like, you know, groundbreaking or whatever, like, or, you know, like if you don't like have any ideas of stuff that you want, but like even like, you know, something that's yours, like a website that like you like created from scratch, or like, you know, you like found something you liked on the internet and changed it a bit, like, you know, like that is totally like fine too, but like something that's yours and that you're excited about.
What do you do if you don't come from a classic tech background? Next, TK talks with Mushambi Matuma, the CEO of the South African-based app development and design firm Altavex. Mushambi is also the author of Tech Adjacent, the exponential guide to leveraging technology for business success.
We've been having this discussion about what is tech, who's considered to be in tech, who can get a tech job, how do you get that? But there's also this other thing that has been kind of swirling in the air for the past few years, and it's about being tech adjacent. So I thought that you might be the perfect person to call for this conversation.
Much appreciated. I think I have a little bit of context.
So let's go into it. So when someone says to you that they're tech adjacent, what should I be thinking of?
Really, what tech adjacent means for me is that technology moves really, really fast, at light speed sometimes, and even faster. As we have this conversation, there's going to be new tech that's being developed, being launched, being announced. So it's really difficult for anybody to keep up with technology. It's even those who are in it, even developers, even tech entrepreneurs, even those in the Valley or anywhere else in the world, it's not possible to keep up with it. It just moves too quick. So we can't expect ourselves to be able to keep up with it or expect our staff or anyone we work with to do so. But at the same time, because it's moving so fast, no one has a choice to ignore technology. It's not an option anymore. You can't stay away from it. It's part of our daily life. It's how we're even having this conversation, you know, several thousands and thousands of miles away from one another. So you can't keep up. You can't avoid it. What do you then do? And for me, what tech adjacent means is exactly that, is that you need to be next to, you need to be close, have close proximity to technology. You need to be very close by. And I think, fortunately, that's something that anyone can do. Whether you're a developer, whether you're a techie, whether you're somebody's mother, somebody's grandmother, whether you're quite young, everyone can be very close by technology. And it's really just about having an understanding of the way it works and how it relates to where I am in life, where the industry that I work in. And that's really it. Like, the simpler, the better.
In terms of removing the complications around tech, what does that mean for someone that is trying to get into this world? Because there's a lot of opportunity here, and people might see themselves as a graphic designer or, you know, anything, honestly. How does someone remove those barriers to success in terms of getting into the field?
I think I'll use myself as an example to answer. So I originally was a political science student at Pepperdine University in LA, and I studied politics and I studied art. I had some context to tech growing up because my dad worked at Apple Computer. I got to play with a lot of computers, but he never taught me how to code. I didn't learn that side of kind of the business. I was just involved in like playing with these things and these gadgets and these Newtons and the old iMacs and everything, right? And now for the last 10 years, I run a digital innovation lab that builds tech. So we specialize in banking apps and financial services solutions, insurance, all kinds of mobile apps from consumer facing games to like deep level payment solutions. But my coding skills are next to not, right? You do not want me to be the guy that touches any of the code, right? Because it's going to be messy. It might get it done, but it's going to take a long time and it's going to be glitchy, right? That's the reality. Right. But I've been able to build a very successful business being right next to tech, selling tech, building tech, and being the most senior person at the company next to my business partner, but not being able to do any of it actually. And I think it's a perfect example of what being tech adjacent is that the careers going forward are really about understanding the ecosystem around technology, right? So I've got a pretty fair understanding of the different tools that have gone into building an Uber or an Airbnb or any kind of other banking solution, right? And very rarely do developers this day and age build from scratch, right? Now, what we're doing more than ever is we're integrating. We found this open source solution, we've found this, and we've integrated this API, and we pull all it together. And so there's some decent knowledge that needs to happen there, but you don't actually have to have all of that raw skill to be able to develop a career. I think, you know, if you think about some of the biggest social media applications that exist, I don't really think that they're focused on hiring the best technical talent. There are, you know, Instagram is really trying to figure out people that understand human behavior more than anything else, right? Like, it's really not about the next feature. It's really about like, cool, how can we get people to stay on this infinite scroll a little bit longer?
Right.
So I think careers in tech are no longer technical as much as they used to be.
I could see, though, where some people would be a little bit hesitant to own their place in tech because they don't consider themselves tech. Have you come across that as a block for some people?
Definitely, because the first thing, you know, especially when we talk about, and I speak to a lot of startups and startup entrepreneurs and guys looking to get funding or to get some their first Series A round or whatever it might be. And for a long time, that conversation was you need a technical co-founder or you need to be the technical co-founder or founder, right? And so it's like you couldn't build a company in tech unless you were a techie, unless you had deep-seated roots as an engineer. And I think that conversation still exists in some levels, but I think that perception is now changing. Technology's job is only here to make your life easier, better, simpler. That's it. That's all tech actually is. It's got nothing to do with the zeros and ones, actually. You know, the pencils that we use, the pens we use, the whiteboard markers, those are technologies. And I think we just have to simplify what our expectation is. It doesn't have to be hyper tech and high tech and these very complex algorithms or applications or solutions. It's really just like, does it make my life simpler? Does it make my life better? Does it make it a little bit more efficient?
Awesome. Now I feel more confident myself, you know, owning my space. So I want to move to like kind of a different place. When you go to the store, the cashiers are, some of them are just computers now, and there's just one person manning the area, or, you know, Uber drivers or, you know, rideshare drivers are interfacing with sometimes 2-3 platforms at a time. Delivery people with, you know, different food platforms. So like, does it extend down to the everyman that's doing all the like right now essential work that we need in the world? Are they tech adjacent? Are they in tech?
I think so. And I think it is from a behavior standpoint. So they might not be as deep rooted as a cashier or an Uber / Lyft / every other rideshare driver, right? Like you mentioned. But if you think about how we integrate with our lives, as soon as we wake up, I mean, we're mobile first, and that's worldwide, right? Everything that we consume is right there in the palm of our hand, faster than ever before, right? And in a bitter, in a bigger, wider reach than ever before. So I think we're all interacting with tech every single day. I mean, we think of, you know, in the global lockdown that's happening right now, we're all communicating on Zoom or FaceTime or WhatsApp calls or Skype, you know, for some people, or Microsoft Teams or Slack or Asana, whatever it is, right? So we're all using all of these various tools that are technologies actually more and more every single day. You know, I always ask people, like, you know, one of Ray Kurzweil's predictions for the future is, like, you know, by 2030 or 2040, you know, every human being will have a deep relationship with VR or AR. And I'm like, well, cool. How many of you guys have a deep relationship with Siri right now? You know, a lot of us do. You know, a lot of us might spend some time speaking to Siri or,
yeah,
you know.
There's whole movies about people speaking to a Siri-like thing and having romantic relationships.
Exactly. More now than ever. And we do it in a different way. We say, hey, what song is playing? Or, hey, how can I get to this next location, the fastest route? You know, so all of those things, I don't think we necessarily acknowledge because it's so much part of our life, right? Everyone logs into Facebook every morning and checks their memories or their stories for the last couple of years, or into Instagram or into TikTok. And I think because all of these things are just normalized, that we forget that we're actually speaking and interacting with robots and AIs all day long.
What do you suggest in terms of shifting the thought? You know, like if someone now wants to go from where they are at to tech adjacent to tech, like what are the mindset shifts that a person should have?
I think the very first thing is simplifying it, right? Is that we tend to overcomplicate what tech is and what it involves. And I think it speaks to what I said a little bit earlier, that tech's sole job from the history of man, since the first man existed, the first woman existed on Earth, was to make life a little bit simpler, better, and easier. So I think that's the first adjustment that we need to make, is that really understanding that we're already in it. The second thing I would say is that it's just really about understanding how technology works and moves. And there's two things. There's the first thing I talk about, where the technology is really based in convenience and understanding human needs. So if you understand humans, you will always understand technology. The second layer is that technology, like, it doubles in capacity. People argue this from 12 to 24 months, but you can pretty much predict that the next iPhone or the next Samsung that you get is going to be double in capacity, speed, processing power, etc. And that's going to continue. So it's actually very easy to map out where technology is going. A lot of times we think that it's going to be something that, like, dropped here from Mars that we've never seen before, never heard of. But technology is, like, hereditary. It has a beginning. Like, whatever it is now, it's going to adapt from. So it's not going to adapt from something you've never seen or heard of. So I think once we get, like, comfortable with that, is simplifying it, understanding that we've always been involved with it, we all know it, and then understanding that it's hereditary, and where it's going to jump from now is going to be where it's going to go next. I think it's a lot easier to then predict the future or predict where technology is going or get on board with it, because it doesn't have to be this thing that's so far removed. It's those guys, you know, those guys downstairs in the basement with headphones on. It's all of us.
Yeah. Yeah.
We can all be next to tech and really become tech adjacent. And I think it's in all of us, no matter the job title, no matter the level of experience or education. We can all do this, and we're all doing it already, and we're going to be part of the future. So it's not going to take us over.
Tech can be one man, every man, or a middleman. Let's break it down in the debut of a new segment on the show called Gengineering by one of our most outspoken members of the Glitch team.
I'm Jen Schiffer, and I'm the Director of Community Engineering at Glitch. Who we consider to be in tech, or what makes a tech company, is a topic I find extremely tedious, very annoying, wasting my time, but also fascinating. You know, the distinctions often used by folks traditionally in tech to, you know, further keep the underrepresented in tech underrepresented, which is very gatekeepy. But at the same time, it also gives us a nice illustration of what tech means to the people who are building it and who are consuming it. And also, it was used by my students who test me on a weekly basis. I used to teach a college course on tech literacy to non-computer science majors at a large liberal arts college, and a big component of the curriculum was teaching them how to create and use spreadsheets, which are the backbone of any functioning modern society. But I often got pushback from them saying, you know, they don't care about spreadsheets, or like, I don't understand why I need to know about them. And often they just tell me, like, it's not like I'm going into tech. Now, when I was studying computer science in the early 2000s, in tech was an idea taught to me as building tech in the industry, which at the time was Google and Facebook. Like, those were the cool places to go work. And also, the industry back then meant Silicon Valley, which is a location. And so I'm sure there are folks in the industry back then and today who do not consider me to be in tech because I've never left the New York metropolitan area. And today, the idea has weirdly pervaded into our culture. And I say weirdly because the vision of who uses and creates tech has changed quite significantly. You know, many of the big companies stopped requiring traditional computer science backgrounds. They've also stopped requiring, like, holding college degrees, period. And most businesses that weren't considered in tech are building in-house software and hardware teams to get stuff done. You know, I would never think that Casper, the mattress company, is a tech company, but they do have, like, a whole in-house set of teams set to set them up for success, which requires technology to allow consumers to complete transactions. And yeah, consumers are using tech to complete most of their transactions today. And I want to note, there have been two extremely significant developments in tech between my going to college and me talking about this today, which are the launches of the iPhone and then the iOS App Store. Apps. I can talk about apps for days, like how they absolutely vex me, but also provide me much entertainment convenience. And I think a lot of people will agree. You know, there's this, like, kind of half joke, half heteronormative misogynist reality where many of the apps that provide any sort of convenience for us were invented by men who were trying to replace their moms. You know, we use them to get rides to the mall, connect with someone to clean our room, get us dinner, so on and so forth. And what we're starting to see is that, especially in quarantine, these apps are becoming many folks' lifelines, whether a people or a business, for better and for worse. So here's a cool, fun-free exercise for you. This week, or even just like a day this week, I want you to log what apps you use and if it's acting as a middleman between you and a small business. And I want you to see if you can eliminate it or find a way to support those small businesses in other ways. And I also want you to keep an eye out for the impact of letting apps you use abuse your autonomy, privacy, and money. You know, we're seeing the gig economy apps like Uber and Lyft collapsing under the quarantine. And they're asking for help from the same government they fought relentlessly to not help their gig workers. And we'd love to see it. But we also love to see tech be used to remove the middleman. I live in Jersey City, and they did something really cool, I think. They made a great site cataloging all the local restaurants who were open for takeout during quarantine with links to their menus and how to contact them directly. And this signals to businesses that the city cares about them. And it signals to consumers a way to directly contribute to that small business and give them their money without letting the 20 sites that Yelp seems to own take a cut of it. So I guess not all tech is bad. In fact, here's another cool, free, fun exercise for you. I want you to look for the folks using tech right now to help people during the chaos, and I want you to celebrate them. I look to and celebrate tech companies like the Human Utility, which allows folks to pay the water bills of those in Detroit so that they don't lose access to the basic human need of access to water. And I've seen people build apps on Glitch too to, like, share data about the pandemic and even, like, help parents coordinate childcare with each other during quarantine. I think the tedious debate of who is in tech or out of tech or whatever that means will continue until the end of time, as these debates tend to do. But the reality of who uses tech and creates it will hopefully continue to evolve. I think so. I think that despite our industry's typical gatekeeping, I envision code being seen as a normal everyday tool, like a pen and paper, or a hammer and nail, or whatever. And I think that because of that, folks who find the apps that they use are maybe not serving their needs or harming them or others, I think that they'll use code to make their own tech in response, whether they are, you know, considered in tech or not. And most importantly, everyone in the world will recognize that I am right and spreadsheets are the backbone of a functioning modern society.
That's it for this episode of Shift Shift Forward. Visit us online at glitch.com/SSF. Follow us on Twitter. Our Twitter handle is @glitch. And let us know what you think about this episode by using the hashtag #ShiftShiftForward. If you really like the show, then subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or wherever you find your favorite shows. Leave us a rating and a review. Shift Shift Forward is produced by Maurice Cherry and Keisha TK Dutez, with editing by Brittany Brown. Sound design by Keisha TK Dutez and mixing by C. Special thanks to the entire team at Glitch and to Kristen from our design team and her friend Mike Sunday for helping with a Gengineering intro. Here's what's coming up on Shift Shift Forward. We've all experienced it before. You go to your favorite website, but it's not loading. Or you try clicking on a link to complete a transaction, but your browser times out and you get an error message. It can be frustrating to deal with outages and similar issues from a user perspective, but let's see what it looks like from the other side. What happens when these incidents occur, and what does it take to get everything running smoothly again?